A child stands transfixed in Chartres Cathedral, watching blue and red light dance across white stone like living spirits. Her father's offhand remark shatters a young mind's certainty. We don't know how to make that blue anymore. In that moment, the myth of inevitable progress crumbles. If humanity could lose something so beautiful, what else have we forgotten? This question launched a decades-long obsession, a global hunt through mines, monasteries, and war zones to uncover the hidden stories behind the colors that built civilizations. What emerges isn't just chemistry or art history, but tales of empires financed by crushed insects, artists who chose beauty over longevity, and pigments worth more than gold that sparked revolutions. Every color carries secrets of obsession and sacrifice, of beauty extracted at terrible cost, of knowledge gained and catastrophically lost. The story begins underground with elemental shades, charcoal black, ochre red, and bone white. These humble colors harbor extraordinary histories. Black dye enriched Caribbean pirates, pencil lead was so valuable English miners endured strip searches, and white paint contained poison so sweet people couldn't resist tasting it. In 1879, 8-year-old Maria de Satuala glanced upward in Spain's Altamira caves and gasped, "Look, Papa, oxen!" Above her thundered magnificent bison, 2 meters long, muscles rippling across stone in confident charcoal and ochre. These masterpieces had gone unseen for 15,000 years, hidden above adult eye level. When her father published the discovery, academics dismissed it as fraud. He died 9 years later, vindication arriving too late. These ancient works reveal a haunting paradox. They survive ice ages when left alone, but fade once discovered. Lascaux closed in the 1990s after visitors' exhalations threatened the paintings. Australia functions as one vast ochre quarry. Before colonization, groups gathered at corroborees to exchange prized goods, especially high-quality ochre from sacred mines like Wilgamia. This ochre traveled hundreds of miles, traded for spears and shields. White settlers' arrival triggered the Ochre Wars. Aboriginal travelers, following ancient trade routes, took sheep as sustenance, uninterested in European land ownership concepts. Settlers retaliated violently, escalating to massacre near Beltana in 1863. For settlers, ochre was colored dirt. For Aboriginal people, it was identity, ceremony, ancestral connection, worth dying for. Lead white's deadly allure extended beyond canvas into cosmetics. In 1870s New York, Bloom of Youth Foundation promised eternal beauty. One St. Louis housewife who diligently applied this product died of lead poisoning in 1877, joining countless victims spanning ancient Egypt, Rome, and Japan, where geishas paired white-leaded faces with fashionably blackened teeth. The poisoning progressed insidiously. First came lethargy, easily blamed on tight corsets. Then, insomnia created fashionably pale, hollow-cheeked appearances Victorian suitors found attractive. As victims weakened, tiny blue lines appeared on wrists and ankles. Constipation, vomiting, kidney failure followed. This plumbism killed slowly, transforming beauty into suffering. Lead white's chemical instability created problems beyond toxicity. It transformed from brilliant white to black lead sulfide over time. This appears dramatically in Dunhuang's Mogo Caves along China's Silk Road. These 8th-century sacred caves contain puzzling images, figures with black bones but delicately painted robes, holy men with startlingly dark faces. These weren't artistic choices but chemical reactions. Originally pink flesh tones created with lead white had oxidized over 1,400 years, literally transforming flesh to blackened bone. Local folklore explains these pigments through tragedy. A widowed painter and his daughter, commissioned by a fearsome warlord, faced disaster when Dunhuang's pigments were depleted. In a dream, the daughter encountered Guan Yin, who revealed a hidden well containing pure colors. She descended by rope to collect pigments, but the knot slipped. Her grieving father looked down to see a magical spring gushing 5 essential colors, black, red, green, blue, and pure white, flowing from her sacrifice. Turner's Waves Breaking Against the Wind once blazed with ruby sunset. Today, only gray wash remains, the carmine completely faded. Despite warnings about unstable pigments, Turner deliberately chose brilliant but impermanent reds, prioritizing immediate impact over longevity. Conservation scientists discovered his notorious carelessness, letting rain drip on canvases, allowing mold on primers, even tearing a flap in one painting for his cats. That vanished carmine came from cochineal, tiny insects treasured by Incas and Aztecs, later jealously guarded by Spanish colonizers. This blood-red dye colored king's robes and cardinals' vestments and remains in cosmetics and food today, E120. By 1575, about 80 metric tons of dried cochineal, trillions of insect bodies, arrived annually in Spain. European fashion embraced this deeper red called ingrain. Shakespeare referenced it in Twelfth Night when Countess Olivia describes her portrait's rouge as ingrain, wordplay Elizabethans understood as cutting-edge cosmetics. Spain zealously guarded cochineal's secret origin. Nicolas Joseph Thierry de Menonville broke Spain's monopoly by escaping Mexico with hidden cochineal insects, bluffing past customs with openly displayed botanical specimens. After a grueling journey to Haiti, he established his own operation. Despite being named Royal Botanist, he died disappointed around age 30 when his precious shipment to the King's Garden sank with the ship Postillon de Rochelle. In Cremona, Italy, instrument makers obsess over the orange varnish that gives Stradivarius violins their distinctive glow and possibly their unmatched sound. This recipe, lost around 1750, might reveal these legendary instruments' soul. The tradition began in 1499 when Giovanni Leonardo da Martinengo, a Sephardic Jewish lute maker expelled from Spain, arrived and taught Andrea and Giovanni Antonio Amati. Andrea created some of the first violins in the 1550s, and his grandson, Niccolò, eventually taught Stradivarius and Guarneri. A letter in Stradivarius' hand mentions varnishing of the large cracks that the sun may not reopen them, suggesting soft, slow-drying varnish requiring sunshine exposure. As a Jewish refugee, Martinengo likely traveled through North Africa, where he encountered safflower, an orange flower yielding yellow with alkalis and crimson-pink with acids. In Mediterranean bazaars, he found dragon's blood, brownish-red tree sap, oils, and resins for varnishes. To achieve an egg yolk translucent color, he dried madder roots in Mediterranean sunshine and pounded them with mortar and pestle. With alum, madder produces vibrant orange-red hues. Today, the orange Stradivarius Il Cremonese captivates visitors with its tiger-like maple back that dances with light, a reminder that beauty transcends individual senses. Michelangelo's unfinished The Entombment reveals Renaissance economics through absence. The Virgin Mary's robe remains blank because ultramarine blue hadn't arrived from the patron. The young artist couldn't afford this precious pigment himself. Ultramarine's Italian name, Ultramarino, means from beyond the seas, referring to its Afghan origin. Made from lapis lazuli, it once cost more than gold. In Taliban-controlled Afghanistan, Chicken Street merchants sold lapis at desperate prices, their treasure reduced to survival currency. The dangerous journey to Bamiyan passed ruined tanks and unexploded ordnance. The valley's two giant Buddha sculptures displayed visible ultramarine in rainbow-circled auras, the first known use of lapis as pigment. 11 months later, the Taliban destroyed these ancient monuments. Memories of Chartres Cathedral's blue light returned throughout Afghan travels. Creating blue glass requires just cobalt oxide in melted silicon, yet we cannot recreate medieval glass. What made Gothic glass special wasn't formula, but imperfections. Floating ash, bird debris, campfire stories stirred into slow melting pots. The context of its creation vanished forever. Indigo once propped up empires, wrapped mummies, and sparked revolutions. When it reached Europe, entrenched woad growers resisted fiercely. Their wealth had built medieval cities. Despite death penalties in France and poisoning claims in England, indigo prevailed. By 1860, production surged in British India. Ironically, while blue was Krishna's sacred color, colonial indigo brought brutal suffering. Bengali farmers were forced to abandon rice for indigo, facing beatings and extortion. This sparked the 1860 Blue Mutiny in Barasat village. Postal worker Dinabandhu Mitra's play, Neil Darpan, exposed planters' cruelty. Missionary James Long's translation ignited activism, though he was imprisoned for libel. The system persisted until Gandhi's first civil disobedience in Bihar in 1917, supporting indigo peasants. Every hue carries stories of sacrifice and obsession. Colors built empires, sparked revolutions, and inspired masterpieces. In our synthetic world, we've forgotten color was once worth dying for, literally. When light dances through stained glass or sunset paints the sky, remember someone once moved mountains to create that color.